Jesus also told them another story. Once a man had two sons. The younger son said to the father, "Give me my share of the property." So the father divided his property between his two sons. No longer after that, the younger son packed up everything he owned and left for a foreign country, where he wasted all his money in wild living. He had spent everything. When a bad famine spread through that whole land, soon he had nothing to eat. He went to work for a man in that country, and the man sent him out to take care of his pigs. He would have been glad to eat what the pigs were eating, but no one gave him a thing. Finally, he came to his senses and said, "My father's workers have plenty to eat, and here I am starving to death. I will go to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against God in heaven and against you. I am no longer good enough to be called your son. Treat me like one of your workers.'" The younger son got up and started back to his father. But when he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt sorry for him. He ran to his son and hugged and kissed him. The son said, "Father, I have sinned against God in heaven and against you. I am no longer good enough to be called your son." But his father said to the servants, "Hurry and bring the best clothes and put them on him. Give him a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet. Get the best calf and prepare it so we can eat and celebrate. The son of mine was dead, but now he has come back to life. He was lost, and now he has been found." And they began to celebrate. The older son had been out in the field, but when he came near the house, he heard the music and dancing. So he called one of the servants over and asked, "What is going on here?" The servant answered, "Your brother has come home safe and sound, and your father had ordered us to kill the best calf." The older brother got so angry that he would not even go into the house. His father came out and begged him to go in, but he said to his father, "For years I have worked for you like a slave, and always have obeyed you. But have I never even given me a little goat so that I could give you a dinner for my friends? This other son of yours wasted your money on prostitutes, and now that he has come home, you ordered the best calf to be killed for a feast." His father replied, "My son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we should be glad and celebrate. Your brother was dead, but now he is alive. He was lost, and now he has been found."
Hey, thanks for reading that as well. We appreciate that. Before Larry comes and sends our Roots kids out, and before our friend Virgil Fry comes up and preaches on this text, if you are in a Roots class, I want you to come forward up here real quick. You may see these stands next to me and posters that are turned that way. You're going to get a sneak preview of what these posters are before everybody else does, okay? So you can come look at this one over here to my left and this one over here to my right. And then you can start heading out toward Miss Bonnie and Xander over here. And Larry, how about you come lead them out in song while they're taking a look at these posters?
Blue skies and rainbows and sunbeams from heaven are what I can see when my Lord is leading me. I know that Jesus is well and alive today. He
Good morning. Nice being with you, very much so. I look forward to this time of worship, as I always do. This is a very specifically good congregation in my line of work with Lifeline Chaplaincy, you being literally the founding congregation that helped launch what has become a work not only here in Houston, but Dallas and Fort Worth and the Austin area and beyond. So thank you. Thank you for being who you are. Nice to worship with my family and to hear their participation in this as well. King made the comment that it's not Sunday, it's Friday. So you have to know, I guess, the spelling of fry. But anyway, it's nice being with you. The parable that was just read is often called the parable of the prodigal son. Probably the best known of all Jesus' parables. But when you really look at it, it could also be called the parable of the dutiful, ungrateful older brother. It could also be called the parable of a compassionate father's welcome. All three of these parables, two of them were spoken on last week by Steve, the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin, and then this one, were told by Jesus in sequence to an audience who were a little upset that Jesus was affiliating himself with people that they felt were not worthy to be shared a meal with or to have fellowship with. They needed to be pushed out to the sides of society. And when Jesus hears this, he responds with these three parables. So it could be an incredibly faithful, almost foolishly faithful shepherd could be the first one. A nurturing, caring, tenacious woman who wouldn't give up on her lost coin. And once she finds it, she insists on sharing in celebration. And then a parent who is willing to love his children enough to let them go, even though he realizes he might not ever see them again. Also realizing that true love doesn't smother, it has to let go, with the idea that love is there. This is a rather confronting image of God to that audience and probably to us too. We think of the God of the universe, the energy force that speaks worlds into being, choosing to call himself a parent, a father. Of all the titles that this creator God could choose for himself, this seems to be his favorite one. And it's a startling truth that we are all, at some times, the rebellious prodigal son. We are all, at some times, the dutiful, ungrateful older brother. We're trying to do it just right, and nobody cares, and God's not even paying attention, and nobody pays attention to me, and I'm unappreciated. And I've always followed the rules, and where has it gotten me? Just in this rut. And then the real truth, that we are all loved unconditionally by God as his children, no matter what. That's an incredible picture of God that I have to struggle to remember again and again. That God is with us, for us, and will do anything for us, regardless of where we've been, who we've been with, what we've done, what we've lost. So it kind of shakes up our image of this comfortable God or this angry God or this distant God or this God that's out to trip us up. This story is a story of family dynamics. Those of you that know about family dynamics, of how families get along and they tend to set their patterns. Those of you that are the oldest children can relate well to the oldest brother in this story. And those of you that are younger can say, yeah, but we can always do it this way. And I was the middle child, third of four, so you learn to be the sneaky one at that point, because that way other people get blamed for stuff that you had thought about and done. So that's what family dynamics is. And so this story kind of touches on that. Steve, I listened to your reflections from last week of the other two parables, the shepherd and the lost coin. And you also talked about you have this rather shy side in your personality, and you really don't prefer parties. And for you, unfortunately, every one of these stories ends with a party. And so you were a little uncomfortable with that, and I get it. Usually if I go into a room of people that I don't know anybody, I'm looking for somebody in the corner, maybe two people, that I can sit down and talk to them. But I've got friends that you give them a room full of people, and they're like, oh, man, look at all the people I can meet. And I'm going, you're crazy. Why would you want to do that? So, I remember one time Carol's school was having a teacher Christmas party at somebody's house. And we were walking into this house, and it was supposed to be a meal. That's what I was told. But there were some people there that were dancing. And this other teacher was walking in with me. And she said, oh, boy, they're dancing in there. And she ran in there and immediately started joining these people that were dancing. I, on the other hand, said, oh, no, there's people dancing in there. Because that gene was bred out of me because of the way that I was bred within the churches of Christ. You know, we don't get that. Some of you know what I'm talking about. Carol and I would sometimes fly places. I'm with people a lot in the hospitals and deal with people and hear all their stories, and I really am grateful to get to do that. But when I get on an airplane, I try to look straight ahead or look at a book or try not to, because I really don't want to hear the story of the person next to me. However, Carol Fry would sit down, and the first thing she'd do is say, oh, well, where are you from? And start this conversation, and before you know it, they were long-lost relatives that had all this stuff in common, and I'm saying, please, don't do this. So, we're all different. God didn't create us all out of the same cookie-cutter mold, and isn't that terrific? So, Steve, I'm with you, except I think you may need a little therapeutic help. If you know a good therapist, you might want to see one. So, that's where this story goes, of different personalities, different roles people play. And this is a God that's hard to imagine, regardless of what our personality is. It really doesn't matter. The God that I often think of is the God that demands perfection. You've got to get it exactly right, down to the letter of the law, or God will trip you up. He's very disappointed. He demands lots and lots of work. And don't enjoy that work. You better not feel much satisfaction about it. You just keep going. It's almost like sometimes I adopted the God of the Puritans, that joylessness was righteousness, rather than the true followers of Jesus who were told just the opposite. And in fact, Steve, God's wanting to throw a party for you and for me and for each one of you, a party that is designed just for you. That's an amazing God to me. So there's four major characters in this story. Obviously, you've got the younger son, who makes a very horrible, bold statement to his dad. He basically says, I wish you were dead. Because when you die, I get the inheritance. So if by him saying, I want my inheritance now, he's basically saying, I wish you weren't here, Dad. And in fact, since you're not, go ahead and give me the inheritance. And with this impulsive decision, decides to take it with no thought of the consequences, and I'm out of here. Second one, older son. He was the worker bee. If you're keeping a farm going, it's round-the-clock work. Crops have to be planted and tended and brought in. He was out there with the servants, bringing in the crops, working hard, and never gave a thought that he might feel trapped. And the fact that he could actually enjoy what he was doing because of all that he had that was already his, but he didn't appreciate it. And also felt this competition with this younger son that chose to go a different way. And then there's the servants. That's the third group. Now these were not people that were part of the bloodline in the family, but they were a part of the economic bloodline that kept things going. And they were very vital to this story. They helped the father going to get the things that he told him to get. They even joined in on the celebration of what Casey just read was they all began to rejoice. So the servants were part of this family dynamic as well. And then there's the father, the one that had granted the son's wish, who kept his loving heart open for his son, even though he knew he might die in his foolishness. And there's also another factor to that. He refused to be bound by the embarrassment of a son that brought the family shame. Part of the Middle East culture at that time, and in certain parts still is the last thing that you do is embarrass your family. And what this son had done when he asked for his dad to be dead was he brought shame upon the family in that community. And when a son rebelled that openly, he actually was given permission by others in the community to take his life. You could actually kill someone who was that rebellious because it was that egregious of a sin to bring that much shame to this father and to this house. And so the father could have been bound by that and have stayed with that, but instead doesn't. Now, I want you to look at two paintings that I have brought. So, Steve, if you'll do that one, and Michaela, if you'll do this one, flip them around. And I actually want you, if you can, to come up and look at them for just a minute. Come by both of them. They're very different. They're both a painting of this story, different ways. We're also going to put it out there. If you don't want to come up here, I'll just call your name and embarrass you anyway. But come by and just look at it for a minute, at both of them, and see what jumps out at you. One is by Rembrandt from the 1600s. It's the one on the right, the man with the robe on. The other is by a German priest who survived the Holocaust named Koder, and this is his rendition. So tell me what you see. Come up close. I'm going to ask Steve, if he would, to just see if there's two or three comments. What strikes you about these when you look at them? What stood out with you about them? So some of you less shy ones can speak up. And even if you're shy, you can speak up. So raise your hand and let Steve call on you. Something about either one of these paintings or both.
That one with the red, you can see the servants in the background.
See what in the background?
The servants.
Servants, yes, in the background.
That one's too dark.
It's very dark, yes.
And detailed.
And it's thought the painter made it dark on purpose to give that mood.
And the one over there, I think I see the two brothers, and one of them is being hugged by the father. The taller one is the father because the younger one has like a beer in his bag.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. The other one is just like staring at them
very observant. Yeah, the one that's got, it's probably a wine bottle or a beer bottle in his pocket in the one on the left. And so we know who the older brother is. He's just kind of standing off, not participating. Very good.
In the picture with the blue, if the older brother is holding himself apart, it's almost like he is the one who's separated from the father.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. He's the untouchable instead of the brother.
Yeah. And part of it is that's his choice. Because what the father says, it doesn't have to be this way. But yeah, you're right.
One more?
Oh, two more.
Two more.
Okay. They're doing so good.
I'm not sure if colors have anything to do with the impression that the artist wants us to receive, but the color purple in that culture was one of royalty. Mm-hmm. And it seems like both sons are recognized as being loyal and royal in their father's eyes.
It's good. It's true.
In the picture on the left, the older brother appears to be the sneaky third or fourth child that Virgil talked about, because he's sneaking around to get some information. Probably a tattletale.
Yeah.
Are we? You want one more or what?
Just one more, yes.
Okay, I got a bunch of hands.
Okay, two more.
Okay, sorry.
I'm easy today.
Go right here and then we'll go back up to the front.
Okay.
I see like the both of them is either asking for forgiveness or making confession.
Okay. Who was making the confession? The younger brother? Is that what?
The younger brother.
Okay.
The younger one, she said.
Gotcha.
Blue one, he seemed like the father is hugging the prodigal son, that one that came back. And the one in the back, he's just looking at him like, what is you doing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you can see it from the back, but if you look closely, if you have to come up here closely, one of the things that's impressive is the hands on the Rembrandt painting are like two different sizes. The hand on the left is more like a masculine, bigger hand. The one on the right is smaller and feminine. And art critics have looked at that and felt like the left hand was probably Rembrandt's. The right was the woman's he did a painting called The Jewish Bride, and it very well could have been hers. Rembrandt was also, this is one of the last things he did, he was losing his eyesight, which may Michaela have to do why he painted it dark. He had lived a pretty debaucherous life. He has one painting from when he was in his 30s when he's in a house of prostitution. And it's obviously him, and he's very proud of the wildlife that he gets to live. He became very wealthy. He lost a lot of wealth. He was in debt. He lost one wife and two women that he lived with and five children before he got to this painting. And so he knows what it's like to be all three in the sense. But it's felt like he was emphasizing the female role of the parent. That God is also a nurturing mother, not just a strong father. And that he incorporated both of those. And this is the only painting that has a woman in the background. It could be a servant, but there is a woman in the background. This is probably the older brother, and this is a bystander with his arms closed saying, I'm not sure about any of this. I'm just going to take it in. The other one is very much of a warm picture. And as you said, the older brother he's got his hands clenched. He's listening, but he's trying to keep himself distant. It's pretty fascinating. Neither one shows him running, or shows the father running, but it shows the reconciliation at a very different place. One of the impacts of the story, as Jesus told it, was this embarrassment part. That if you embarrass me as a father, you really have the right to be killed. When the father runs towards the son, that's not what a powerful father or king figure would do. They would sit and wait. Instead, he probably picked up his robe, ran towards the son in the field the way Jesus told it, grabbed him. When he says to clothe him, this painting, the shoe is literally falling off the son's foot. There's a sandal, but it's too worn out. And the clothing that he has on would be like an undergarment. That's all he's got left. He's in abject poverty. That's all he's got. When the father says, dress him in the best stuff and put a ring on his finger. This was the family ring, the family signet, so that when he goes through the community, they know he's part of the family again. He has been restored. That's a part of the story that's really important to understand, that no one can touch him now. As when we come into God's kingdom, no one can touch us. There's no power greater than God's love for us. And then you've got the story of Jesus himself. In one sense, he fulfills all roles. As the younger son, he left his home, didn't he? Left heaven. The best of the best, he left it and came down here. Not as a rebel, but as following God's will. He knows what it's like to be dutiful in the older brother. You remember one time at age 12, what did he say to his mom when she came back and found him in the temple? Don't you know I must be about my father's business? So he was quite dutiful as the older son. And he was the oldest in his family, we assume. But he also was the forgiving father to many people he encountered. The woman brought to him in adultery. Nobody else is condemning you, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. Jesus lives this story out incarnate himself. This is not just a nice parable that fits in with the other two. He's all of them. And he's reminding us the story's never over as long as I'm with you. But the real power of this story, and this some of this comes from Nouwen's book, The Return of the Prodigal Son, which I highly recommend to you if you haven't read it. Some of it's about how he was impacted by this story and painting. It's from Luke 6. You, all of us, are to be compassionate as your Heavenly Father is compassionate. So not only do we get to live out the role of both sons in this story, but in our better moments, we get to be the Father. When we show mercy and unconditional love to somebody, even if they don't deserve it or we think they don't deserve it, and yet we grant them a kinship in the family of God, we get to be God in the flesh to them. And you've had people be that for you. You know what it's like to be on the receiving end. These are our better moments. These are our redemptive moments. One second here. I'm going to switch back to this mic. Let me read this from a different version, and then we will join together in song. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, let me have the share of the estate that will come late to me. So the father divided the property between them. A few days later, the younger son got together everything he had and left for a different country, where he squandered all his money on a life of debauchery. When he'd spent it all, the country experienced a severe famine, and now he began to feel the pinch. So he hired himself out to one of the local inhabitants, who put him on his farm to feed pigs. And he would willingly have filled himself with the husk of the pigs were eating, but no one would let him have them. Then he came to his senses and said, how many of my father's hired hands have all the food they want and more, and here I am dying of hunger. I will leave this place and go to my father and say, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired men. So he left the place and went back to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was moved with pity. He ran to the boy, clasped him in his arms, and kissed him. Then his son said, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. But the father said to the servants, "Quick, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the calf we have been fattening and kill it. We will celebrate by having a feast, because this son of mine was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now the elder son was out in the fields, and on his way back, as he drew near to the house, he could hear music and dancing. Calling one of the servants, he asked what it was all about. The servant told him, "Your brother has come. Your father has killed the calf we have been fattening because he had got him back safe and sound." He was angry then and refused to go in. And his father came out and began to urge him to come in, but he retorted to his father, "All these years I have slaved for you and never once disobeyed any orders of yours, yet you never offered me so much as a kid for me to come celebrate with my friends. But for this son of yours, when he comes back after swallowing up your property, he and his loose women, you kill the calf we've been fattening." The father said, "My son, you are with me always, and all I have is yours. But it was only right that we should celebrate and rejoice, because your brother here was dead and has come to life. He was lost and is found." Time for a party. Let's sing.
Face.